I am Fiona, feral practice, and I'm here with Marcus Coates.
Hello.
And Alison Smith of Plant Life.
Hello.
And we're here as part of our Ask Somerset Plants project, which is looking at plants as a resource for humans to think about their problems a little bit differently. So people from Somerset and further afield have sent in questions that they are trying to answer or problems that they're trying to solve and that they've been struggling with. And instead of looking to the normal sources, we're going to ask the plants what knowledge and what wisdom they might have for us to solve these questions. So we're here today in the Quantock Hills, parking in Dead Woman's Ditch car park, which was quite exciting. And we've just walked down into the hillside of really close growing, twisted, stunted or at least small oak trees, and hopefully Alison is going to tell us a bit more about why the woods here look like that.
Yeah, so this is a really special habitat that we find in the Quantock Hills and also in other parts of Somerset on Exmoor, and we actually call this Atlantic woodland, part of the temperate rainforest ecosystem, and it's a very globally rare habitat type. Oak trees are one of the key species, particularly in this area. These oaks here are actually relatively young, so maps of this area show that this was heathland in the 1900s. As we move down this hillside, we'll see the oaks become older and probably more twisted and gnarled as well.
So an important element of this project are the questions that come from you, the public.
Now this is an anonymous question. How can we best engage with others when we see so many polarising views and entrenched positions? How can we put aside differences to achieve something genuinely shared and mutually enriching together?
Okay, should we walk into the woodland and have a think about that question?
Fantastic, sounds good.
Okay, what's the nub of the question then, do you think?
We're in a particular moment of divisiveness. You know, families have been divided by issues like Brexit or whatever, but you need to be able to work together. You need to be able to do things that benefit all of you without it just becoming a massive argument. Is there any species in particular that you think might speak to that question?
Yeah, absolutely. So now we're down in the valley here and we've got this lovely glade, lots of sun coming in. We've got lots of lichens growing. And there's a really nice one just here, actually, on this fallen twig. So this is a lichen that likes to live up in the canopy where there's plenty of sunlight. And it's called Witch's Whiskers, is the common name for it. The Latin name is Usnea florida. But although it has a species name, it's actually not a single species, it's not a single organism. What we actually have here are at least two very different organisms living together in a symbiotic, mutually beneficial relationship.
So what we're looking at is lots of tiny, interwoven little fine hair-like structures, but then interspersed with little circles or little cup
yes.
shapes?
Yeah, that's right. So these discs at the ends of the branches are the fruiting bodies for the fungus. So the fungus is sending out spores, and those will then need to meet up with the correct algal partner again to form a new piece of this lichen. So what you can see on the outside is actually a fungus, and then embedded within the fungus is an alga, which is like a very simple plant. So very different organisms from actually different kingdoms, but living effectively as one thing.
This mutually beneficial relationship allows both species to exist in places and in ways that they wouldn't be able to on their own.
Yeah.
So, and they, all right, they're different species, but they could be a bit like us having very different opinions, but we still need each other, and actually we can find ways to work together?
Recent research has suggested that they're actually more like communities. It's not just two organisms living together in this relationship. There are potentially lots of other things going on here. So new science has suggested there are yeasts involved and other bacteria as well. So we're starting to view a lichen as this mutually beneficial community of organisms.
The question's asking about polarising views and entrenched positions.
So these are very different organisms, but I don't know if they're really polarised in that sense. Are there other examples where we could talk about this sense of competition, perhaps?
Yeah, so the lichens themselves, different lichens will compete with each other for space over much longer timescales than we're generally aware of, because they're very slow growing. But actually, recent research has shown that some lichens produce chemicals which act as signals to sort of ward off perhaps mosses or other lichens from growing too close and from growing over them. So they are competing on this very, very long time scale for space. And we might be able to find a nice example of a different type, some different types of lichen, and actually almost sort of see how they're doing that, although we won't be able to see any movement.
Okay, so we're coming down towards the river. I'm able to hear that in the background bubbling away. It's this little stream.
And this is a hazel tree.
Yes.
And yeah. It looks really old because it's absolutely covered in lichens and mosses. So Alison's just given us a hand lens to look through. So you have to get your eye really close to the lens and then the lens really close to the lichen. And then it's like... opens up a whole new world, basically. So there's I'm looking at a leafy foliate lichen, and it's just rippling layers with frilled edges, and it's almost like if you peel something like glue or latex off a flat surface, and it all curves and curls at the edges. And then next door to that there's another one which has got these kind of crater type shapes all over the surface of it, and I'm guessing that's some kind of fruiting body, but I'll have to ask the expert.
Is it quite moon-like?
Yeah, it's moon-like, and almost like suckers on an octopus.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to describe it. This one is actually called the barnacle lichen, because they also look very similar to the barnacles you get in rock pools. And you're absolutely right, they are fruiting bodies, so... that's where the fungus will eject its spores from.
So it's an interesting place to look at, because literally you can't see any bark. It's covered in these different organisms, and they all have their patches, their territories, I suppose, if you'd like to call them.
Yeah.
Would you say that's a kind of a battle, or would you say it's there's a little bit of encroachment? It's a to-ing and fro-ing, perhaps.
It's a to-ing and fro-ing. In some cases, there are always certain species that are particularly competitive and will perhaps, outgrow and will grow over some of the other species and will dominate. But usually, if the woodland's healthy and we've got this matrix sort of habitat that's got glades and more closed spaces and a rich variety of trees and different conditions, then they'll all be able to find their niche.
The healthy environment that you talk about, Alison, feels like that's a culture, a culture that we as humans seem to be able to create if we're sensitive to it, a culture where there isn't one dominant voice, where there are a huge diversity of voices and they all do get heard. The hazel branch.
Yeah, let's be more like the hazel branch.
So the next question we have.
This is an anonymous question, and it's, can stars light the sky forever? It's quite a sweet question, isn't it?
When we look up into the night sky, we're seeing light that was actually emitted a very long time ago. It takes such a long time to travel to our eyes, so it's like looking back in time. And actually, there are lots of places in this woodland where we can look back in time. And the ferns growing here are a really good example of that. So on this lovely old oak tree, we've got these little ferns that are sprouting along this mossy branch, and they're called polypody ferns. And looking at ferns is like looking back in time, because ferns were around 380 million years ago. They were the first plants to develop a vascular system and to develop roots for transporting water. But otherwise, they're very primitive in terms of their reproduction. They don't have pollinators. And there are all sorts of myths around how the fern reproduce, but actually they produce spores often on the backs of the fronds. You can see these little rusty coloured sort of circles on some of these polypody ferns here.
Little sequins.
Yeah, yeah. They sometimes look like they've been sewn in by a sewing machine, isn't it?
The mosses are even older. So we used to think about 400 million years old. We now think probably around 500 million years ago. The mosses and the liverworts were among the first plants to colonise land. So in terms of living forever, obviously the actual lifespan of these individual organisms is quite short, but the species has been around for an incredibly long time and hasn't really changed very much at all in that time either.
Thinking about forever, the idea of immortality, processes of living and dying which in plants they have less defined edges than they do in animals. Life is just shifting through these processes and never actually going away.
Our sense of our own mortality is very linear. But if we enter into any other species, and particularly plants, we see how cyclical it is and how much death is a necessity for so many other species' survival.
So there's a lot of deadwood here. It's a good sign of a healthy woodland, actually. That deadwood is still providing a habitat on which the mosses and fungi are growing and invertebrates are living and feeding.
So in a way, the process of death and death itself provides opportunities for life.
Yeah, absolutely. So aging actually makes it a richer habitat, providing more life for different organisms.
What's powering everything is the light from our own star, our own sun. Loosely speaking, you could say that plants are light becoming material and then cycling into everything else.
It's a nice connection with the original question and the star. So yeah, the energy from the sun lasting, you know, in our own plants and then going into the soil and sustaining other creatures. And obviously that in itself is still finite, but as far as we're concerned and
it's a really long time.
Yes, hopefully it's a very very long time. Yeah.
Okay, have we got another question, Fiona?
We've got a question from Kerry Grant, which is, in the light of recent leadership contests in which we find ourselves confronting a scenario where both candidates are seriously flawed, how would the plants select the best leader?
Okay, what's this question really about? Is it about how we recognise a good leader, or is it about leadership qualities, perhaps?
Yeah, I suppose that's it, isn't it? We are...
The attributes.
Perhaps drawn to big personalities, aren't we? Charismatic individuals tend to take up space on the media and attract.
They dominate, yeah.
Yeah, they dominate a bit. So we listen to the bluster and don't perhaps look for the serious intentions.
We get quite easily seduced, don't we?
We do. What should we look out for as maybe the showy personalities in the woodland that maybe we shouldn't quite trust?
Yeah, I think there's some really good parallels, actually. There are a couple of species that in some of our woodlands take over. So we've got species like rhododendron and laurel. They cast very, very dense shade. They grow quite vigorously and they can form dense thickets and really prevent other plants from growing up, particularly other tree seedlings and a lot of the ground flora species that would normally thrive in the woodland. They're unable to because these plants are so competitive. And they create conditions that really only enables themselves to thrive.
So they're out for themselves?
So yes, so those plants are out for themselves. And, you know, in the case of the rhododendron, quite often people quite like rhododendron. You know, it's got these beautiful, you know, bright pink flowers, these glossy green evergreen leaves. So they catch people's attention, perhaps, and people might quite like them. People quite often have them in their gardens. But actually, in our woodland, they can cause a real problem for other species.
Mm. Well, what plants would you say have better intentions?
Yeah, well, we've got quite a nice example just over here, actually, which is a birch tree. So as we approach, you can make it out from the bark of the tree. It's a very pale bark, a silver birch, with sort of horizontal markings across it. And we can also make out the small triangular serrated leaves. And the birch is one of the pioneers, really, of the woodland. It's a species that colonises your sort of heathland and your more open ground. It's one of the first species to arrive and will gradually create a sort of woodland habitat. And the birch tends to be quite short-lived, but they'll give way to the oaks and the ash and the rowans and the hazels. And because they have this quite loose canopy, they let lots of light through. So that allows other seedlings from different trees to establish. We've got lots of ferns growing around the base. We've got the bilberry. We've got different flowering plants that are all able to thrive under the birch canopy.
So they are leaders in the sense that they lead us into new territory. Unlike the rhododendron and the laurel, they don't take all of that territory for themselves. They're sort of helping to create habitat for other species.
Well, I like the fact that they give way. You know, they're not sticking around forever. They're not so obsessed.
Unlike some of our leaders.
They're not so obsessed with themselves. Okay, we've done our job now. You know, it's time to move on.
What about leadership qualities that are emerging?
I think there are lots of, you know, overlooked heroes in this woodland. So just twining up this oak tree here, we can see some ivy. And ivy is a plant that we probably often take for granted.
Has a bit of a bad rep sometimes, doesn't it?
It can have a bad reputation. Sometimes people think it's a parasite and that it's taking something from the tree that it's growing on. But it's not. I mean, we can see on this one here behind us that the ivy has its own roots. It goes all the way down to the soil, so it's just taking its nutrients and water up from the soil, but it's using the tree to help it and reach up towards the light, but not actually damaging the tree. But what the ivy is doing is it produces flowers that are quite late in the season, and then those turn into berries. And they provide a really important source of nectar late in the year for lots of different pollinating insects. And then the berries provide lots of food for birds. They also provide cover for bats to roost in. So yeah, very overlooked, but still a very important species in the woodland.
I really like the idea of looking for leadership qualities in plants and in organisms that aren't capable of living alone. It does seem like quite a non-human way of thinking about what is productive and what might be a leader.
I love the idea of looking for plants that are basically nurturing. They're nurturing communities, they're nurturing other species. They're allowing space, they're allowing other species to come to them, and they're supporting a whole variety of life. I think if you look at our leaders, that sort of nurturing quality is very few and far between.